Isabel Hagman from The Spectator is with us too, and you keep your ear close to the Tory backbenches. I'm told that what the position Mr. Cameron, they'll be relieved they've won, but the position Mr. Cameron has put them in, they're very unhappy, and that happiness goes all the way up into the cabinet.
Yes, it does. And they feel that they haven't really been consulted properly, which is always David Cameron's problem, is that he makes decisions without factoring in the will of his party, and then they feel very resentful. And even though he hasn't been seriously damaged by a yes vote, this is a no vote, which is good news for him. It's still bad news for him because his party is still unhappy.
All right, well, we hear that Mr. Cameron has tweeted about Mr. Darling and congratulated him on winning the campaign. What do we think Mr. Cameron's going to say now about the implications of more devolution for Scotland for the rest of the United Kingdom?
He absolutely has to spell out the implications for England. If he doesn't mention that, which I'd be surprised if he didn't, then his backbenchers would go into uproar. He needs to talk about the implications for English regions, for English councils. And one of the questions he probably also needs to answer is how on earth to sell that to the electorate. English voters may well feel left out in this discussion, but they have rejected attempts at devolution in the past. And Number 10 has also been very bad at making the case for local democracy, such as police and crime commissioners, city mayors. They've really failed on those counts, so he's got a big challenge ahead of him.
Yes, would have been simpler, wouldn't it? It'd have been cleaner, at least. And this is going to be very messy.
It would have been the most extraordinary day if it had gone the other way. I hope David Cameron acknowledges, I suspect he will in his words in a few hours' time, just how brittle the union is. Down here in Westminster and Whitehall in England, we only woke up to the brittleness of the union very late on, beginning of September, with that first YouGov poll showing the narrowing. But let's think, running through Mr. Cameron's mind, it's not a good idea for anybody to speculate about anybody else's consciousness. But just think, if it had gone the other way, he'd have had to have flown to Balmoral this morning to explain to the Queen why he'd lost her kingdom. He's very punctilious about his relationships with the Queen. He wouldn't have wanted to do it over the telephone. There would have been a cabinet this afternoon, I suspect, and Parliament would have been recalled perhaps even for tomorrow.
Right, but none of that's going to happen.
No.
What is going to happen?
What is going to happen is a knock-on effect which we can't predict. We've talked earlier, Andrew, about the dangers in rushing constitutional legislation. And also, when you look at that vow that was put together for the Daily Record, those pledges, was one of them, which is still tinkling around in my mind, that we will make the Scottish Parliament permanent. Now, the Scotland Act 1998, as you remember, creates it, but we have a tradition in this country of not producing entrenched legislation that successive parliaments can't amend or abandon if they want to. So does that mean we're going to have to change the British Constitution to put in statutory form that pledge to make the Scottish Parliament permanent? There's no question the Scottish Parliament would be anything other than permanent. Nobody's going to repeal the Scotland Act 1998, but it's another intriguing repercussion of that very rushed vow that they all put together.
Is there not a feeling among some Tory backbenchers that Mr. Cameron ripped up the British Constitution on the back of a rogue YouGov poll?
I think so. I think they saw that there was a huge amount of panic at the top of the establishment and that there wasn't a great deal of thought. The problem is that Better Together had been asking for more details on what the leaders would promise for months, but they didn't produce them until they were in a blind panic.
Now, I understand that there's also deep unhappiness on Labour backbenches about Mr. Miliband's performance, but also about the kind of devolution that Gordon Brown has been talking about.
Yes, so there have been MPs such as John Denham who've also been talking about the English question. And there is a real question for Labour here, which is how would this campaign have gone had Scottish Labour been a stronger force in Scotland?
Because they lost a lot of the Labour areas, and I understand that Joanne Lamont, the Scottish Labour leader, her constituency voted strongly yes for independence.
And I was talking to a Labour strategist earlier who said, well, you know, this is a big win for no, but let's not ignore the horror of the working class vote who seemed to have deserted us.
I mean, is Westminster going to try and agree a position among itself and then go and negotiate with the Scottish government about further devolution? Or is it going to say, this is what we've agreed and this is what we're going to do?
The short answer, you've no idea, but it will not be a good idea if it is done. If it is done that way, without consulting Wales and Northern Ireland and more widely, it's Kipling's line on the Boer War. It's no end of a lesson, and the danger is that this great sigh of relief, which is almost audible across the Thames as we sit here,
indeed it is,
will soothe people. They'll start singing lullabies to themselves that it was all right on the night. We shouldn't have got so jumpy. Oh. The press got carried away, and they will be wrong.
All right. Well, Prime Minister making a statement at 7 a.m. here in London. Back to Hugh in Glasgow.